Passages like this from the Gospels feel challenging to me. This kind of a passage usually gets categorized as a healing story or a miracle story. And I have questions about the miracles in the Bible as a whole, and specifically this type, like that's often viewed as spirit possession or mental illness. On the one hand, there's so many stories of Jesus' healing that his power to help people, to make them whole and well, is clearly core to who he was. I believe he was engaged in transformational relationships, and I believe people found wholeness through him, and I believe they do today. Yet on the other hand, as the old theodicy question puts it, if Jesus, and by extension God, is so powerful, why allow so much suffering in the first place? And where is that power to heal now, when so many are sick and dying of COVID, for example? Where is that power to heal when so many suffer from all kinds of other debilitating mental and physical illnesses? We all know too many for whom faith and prayer and even anger at God did not take away their suffering. So I think there's a couple of ways of reading this text and texts like it that are problematic. And I want to name what they are and why I think they're problematic. To take the story as a literal, as if Jesus just went around performing magic tricks for some people and not for others, feels problematic. And to read the story skeptically, seeing it as like, you know, scientifically this was a case of epilepsy, but people back then didn't understand the medical diagnosis, so they thought it was an unclean spirit. Both of those are treating the passage as historical fact in a way. And that's what I call a genre mistake. Mark and all the Gospels were written as story. Mark's Gospel, the earliest, is usually placed around 70 in the Common Era, which is 40 years after Jesus' death. And we don't know that much about the community to whom Mark was writing, but the narrative focus of the Gospel is discipleship, like inviting these people in Mark's community to have a powerful encounter with Jesus and follow. The next couple of chapters into chapter 3 in Mark's Gospel are set in Capernaum on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee. And by chapter 3, pretty quickly in Mark's Gospel, the leaders are threatened enough by him that they're conspiring about how to destroy him. If he were merely healing the sick, it seems unlikely that this would be the response. Charity rarely causes such a response from those in power. So I want to take the passage a little bit slower and read it from a literary and symbolic perspective to see what comes to the surface. Jesus goes into Capernaum on the Sabbath and goes into the synagogue and begins teaching. Everything about that sentence says he intentionally occupied a place of power, a position of power. And the power was not just claimed by him, but acknowledged by those who heard his teaching as one having authority, not as the scribes. The scribes represent the official power structure, but because the structure was unjust, it subverts their supposed authority. People don't respect it. And in the midst of this presence in the synagogue, this man cries out, "Do you want to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." The possessed man represents the authority structure threatened by Jesus' message of radical compassion and hospitality. Or at least he's possessed by that power. It's interesting that he's the one who is able to name Jesus' identity correctly. Jesus speaks directly to the spirit of fear and hostility dwelling in the man and says, "Be silent, come out of him." This is echoed in an encounter a few chapters later when the disciples are on a boat on the Sea of Galilee and a storm comes up, and the storm symbolizes these same dehumanizing forces. And Jesus tells the storm to be silent, and the storm ceases. Here the people say Jesus commands even the unclean spirits and they obey him, just as later his disciples say, even the wind and the waves obey him. So from a literary perspective, I think Mark is taking us right into the heart of Jesus' campaign of compassion and healing. Jesus wants to counter the structures and laws and relationships that dehumanize people by humanizing them. Jesus rarely directly engages his opponents, those who hold and benefit from the prevailing social order. Yet this very embodiment of compassion, of healing, of mercy and care and celebration are themselves an attack on the legitimacy of the prevailing social order that undermined and denied so many of their basic dignity and humanity. Earlier this week, Rick Fabian, one of St. Lydia's oldest, best supporters and friends, called me up. Jake introduced us after sharing with me Rick's recent book, Signs of Life, which we read together as a congregation last summer. I love his writing, his spirited questioning of the tradition, his fearless clarity about the main things and then all the rest of the things. In his book, he describes the altar at St. Gregory's, the church he helped to found in San Francisco, as having an inscription on the altar: "This guy welcomes sinners and eats with them." The whole system Jesus attacks was and is based on only some being the haves who are worthy and the rest being have-nots, those who are unworthy, sinners, in the old-fashioned language. That Jesus celebrated meals with the wrong people is among the most reliable facts we know about the historical Jesus. There is no being worthy for sharing the meal we share tonight. No one has to have it together or believe the right things or even believe anything at all. When we, as we just did, hand bread to one another saying, "This is my body," we administer no test of worthiness. We all hold feelings of unworthiness taught to us by our families, by our churches, by our society as a whole. Here at St. Lydia's, we come to be healed from that affliction. Here, by our radical practice of hospitality, of love, we undo systems of exclusion and marginalization. I think this strange synagogue confrontation is, in a sense, nothing more than putting those unjust systems on notice that their days are numbered and the Holy One of God is leading the way. We share the sermon at St. Lydia's and we'll spend a few moments in silent reflection. Then when you hear the sound of the bell, hopefully not quite as loud as I just rang it, you're invited to share a story or experience sparked by the scripture text tonight or by my reflections. We share stories together because Jesus did, and because in doing so, we come to know each other more deeply. We begin in silence.